5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
From Nepal to North London, from Delhi to Dagenham, from the terraces to the armchair, it's an Arsenal Thing podcast. Football's in our DNA.
Antonio Conte year, who thought that Levy was such a tight arse. He said he'd have some money to play with, but what a give won't keep me in razor blade and shit paper, let alone buy a player.
Hello and welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. I'm your host Tom, and by my side as always, a man who spends more time in bed than he does at the bar, but it's a close run thing, who ignores social etiquette by flossing on the bus with his library card, and denies the existence of Milton Keynes. It can only be Silent Dave Hutchinson. What a pod, the North London Derby and the Battle of the Emirates in the WSL against Chelsea. You all know how it went, but we're going to mull over every kick in minute detail. No Paul tonight, he's off on a jolly, and sadly Connor has left the podcast, but we wish him well. We'll miss his energy, enthusiasm and, of course, excellent match reports. In a revamped pod, I'm back in the gun room with the podcasters Lauren, Jay and Nick to talk about the games and examine the performances. We also reveal our players of the match.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
Arsenal news, Martin Odegaard is no surprise, is it? He's our player of the month. Well deserved, sir. Arsenal have appointed Hussein Issa as the new attacking phase coach, it's been revealed, as they target the Premier League this season. The 34-year-old is set to work with Arsenal's first team, as well as the top talents from the club's Hale End Academy, to improve the technical aspects of their game. The club also unveiled its new stadium wrap designs, which reflects the history of the club and global support. It was attended by a host of players past and present, including Charlie George, Pat Rice, Kenny Sansom, Paul Davis, David Seaman and Martin Odegaard. GG was also present, looking immaculate as ever. He'd make a black sack look fit for a dinner party. Arsenal have been charged by the FA for the third time in recent weeks, this time for the size of the air freshener on the team bus. The offending citrus and honey tree shaped freshener was a centimetre longer than was acceptable under section EC3 of the FA's anti-Arsenal rulebook. Earlier this month, Arsenal were charged for enthusiastically waving at their fans when arriving for the Brighton game, and that was followed by another charge for being unexpectedly top of the league. In the past, Arsenal have been blamed for the increase in energy prices, COVID and Ed Sheeran. Now, eagle-eared listener Ian Whiteley sent us an email because he discovered something about Pod 75. Ian asked if playing Get a Grip by the Stranglers was intended. Well, of course it was. It was a reference to a section of the flannel-headed fanbase who were touched by the stick of idiots after the Newcastle result. Hence, Get a Grip by the Stranglers. But Ian thought we did it for another reason. On listening to Pod 75, I noticed, he says, that Eddie Howe was mentioned in the song. What? Where? He heard the lyrics, didn't have the money round to buy a Murray fowl, been around and seen a lot to shake me, Eddie Howe. Hey, Dave, put it on a minute.
Didn't have the money round to buy a Murray fowl, been around and seen a lot to shake me, Eddie Howe.
It does sound like it, doesn't it? Nice one, Ian. Thanks for getting in touch. If you've got anything like that, it's an Arsenal Thing 4 at gmail.com. That's better than anything we could come up with. Tottenham match facts. Since the start of last season, no player has been directly involved in more London Derby goals in the Premier League than Arsenal's Bukayo Saka. 4 goals and 7 assists. Saka also credited with the most chances in the Gunners' 3-1 victory over Spurs earlier this season. Arsenal have won all 6 of their Premier League London Derby matches this season, keeping a clean sheet in 3 away games. They've not won seven league London derbies in a row since 2007-2008 campaign, which included a home and away win against Spurs. This is the earliest in the calendar year that the North London Derby has been played in the Premier League since 1995, when Tottenham sadly won 1-0 at White Hart Lane on January the 2nd. Following their 3-1 win at the Emirates in October, Arsenal are looking to complete their first league double over Tottenham since 2013-14 season, which was also their last league victory away against Spurs.
Odegaard! Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard. Odegaard! Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard!
After the North London Derby, Simon Jordan and Martin Keown clashed over the game. Have a listen to this. It's quite unbelievable.
I thought the way that Arsenal moved the ball, Jim, with an air of superiority, slickness, Zinchenko coming into midfield. I think the tactics for Conte, don't want to be too critical, but it just feels that that system's too easy to play against. And Arsenal, well-oiled in possession, out of possession. I thought that little triangle, not many people talking about that. The goalkeeper, of course, is in the headlines maybe for the wrong reasons today. I don't think it was anything of his fault, I will say, and on the line, Ramsdale. Why can't he celebrate when he wins a game of football? That triangle with him at the back and then the two central defenders in front, they're very young, Jim, but the performances are so mature. Though, I mean, I know Kane had a couple of chances, that was it, really. They smothered him. And the way that Arsenal play their football, Zinchenko popping into midfield, this is a good time now to be an Arsenal fan, but they've won nothing yet. Everybody wanting to say that Arsenal it's theirs to throw away. Not at all, Jim. Not at all, because it's Man City's title they're hanging on to. And Arsenal have got to develop, have got to keep reaching out to improve and get better. And I see that they will.
I think Tottenham are improving in small margins. Arsenal improving exponentially. That's why you saw the outcome that you saw yesterday in the first half. For 10 minutes in the second half, Tottenham ripped them. And if they'd have scored a goal, Tottenham, the game would have been opened up, because they really did rip them from about 49 minutes up to about 59 minutes. If Tottenham had got a goal, and they could have, should
we
have
must
have
been watching a different game then, Simon.
Well, no, I didn't, Martin.
Had a glass of wine or something?
Let's go back. No, I have a glass of wine.
Arsenal dominated that game.
I have a glass of wine when I come in and have to endure you sometimes.
If things weren't bad enough for Spurs supporters, one fan got ridiculed on TalkSport and they wouldn't let him speak until he said he was happy, which he clearly wasn't.
Let's go and speak to Joe. Joe, you're the first caller of the week. You're a Spurs fan. Good evening and welcome. Joe.
Hello.
All right, Joe.
Yeah, I'm not happy.
Is it Blue Monday, Joe?
No.
No, what is it?
No.
What is it? What are you happy with?
I'm not happy with anything.
Do you know what? You're not hiding, are you? You're making no effort or attempt.
Absolutely.
You're the first caller, Joe, of the week. You're the first caller on the sports bar. We need a little bit of an upbeat, Joe, all right?
Okay, tell you what we'll do, Joe.
I'm going to take you down, all right? And I'm going to give you a chance to be the upbeat caller. First one on a Monday. That's what we need. Set the tone for the rest of the week. Let's go and speak to Joe, caller of the week.
Evening, Joe.
He's a Spurs fan. Joe, good evening.
Good evening,
how
mate.
Are you?
Evening, lads. Yeah, I'm very happy. I'm very happy.
He's sad, dude, mate.
Yeah, go on, Joe. Go on, mate.
Now, there's been some suggestion that Chelsea have been unashamedly copying us, but there's no doubt about it. The other day, Edu went for a full English breakfast. Todd Bowley decided to order the same. I don't know why they're in the same cafe. It's because it's a joke, basically. Richard Garlick went to his barber for a trim, and Chelsea bought the entire shop. And finally, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang played shit for us and now he's playing shit for Chelsea. Stop copying us. Next, you'll want to be top of the league. Well, that's not going to happen, is it?
It's time to enter the gun room for a natter.
Hi, welcome to the gun room. It's not going to be one of these gun rooms that's a bit sedate and a bit tame and limp and all that sort of thing. Not after this weekend. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. We're going to wax lyrical about it, obviously. With me, the Podcateers. I mean, our bench might be a bit thin, but look at this. Look at this lineup we've got. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing great. I told Lauren I wasn't going to miss this one. We either had lots to celebrate or needed to process, and thankfully we are celebrating today.
Yeah, I had a big old box of tissues signed. How are you, Lauren? In Barcelona.
Can't complain. All good. Like Nick said, let's get the show on the road. We have lots of positives to talk about this week, so it's all good.
Yeah. How are you, Tom? Where are you based, by the way?
I'm based in Maidenhead, But I was away.
Oh, apologies for that.
Sorry. I was away. That's why I haven't been back for a while, because I went to Cyprus to see family for Christmas and stuff. So glad to be back in that sense. Yeah, definitely.
Excellent. Well done. No Jay, no Paul. Jay's having a sneaky date with the Mrs. Stacey, and Paul's up to no good. Some sort of Everton protest shenanigans, probably. So North London Derby. Well, after the disappointment of last season, this was a real turn up for the books, wasn't it? We flushed them at the toilet bowl. Earlier on, we had the excitement of a tense battle at the Emirates, Chelsea and Arsenal. We'll come to that in a while. We're going to cover every blade of grass, believe me, in the North London Derby. And we're going to look at the transfer window and discuss Mr. Mudryk. I tell you what, I had some really solid information. The last time I got a bit of information, it was to tell me that Odegaard was the captain. Okay. And there'd been a couple of bits before that. And this Mudryk deal was absolutely cast iron. Except it wasn't. But we'll come to that. Cheeky monkey buggering off to the champs. First off, let's sympathise with Beth Mead. She lost her mum on the 7th to ovarian cancer. We wish her and her family all the best. And it was a lovely tribute. I don't know whether you saw it. There was a picture of the guys in the changing room with a shirt with her name on it, June. So that was really nice. Well done. Showing class. Another thing is it's Nicholas Birthday's Bentner. That doesn't sound right, does it? Let's try again. Nicholas Bentner's birthday. Lord Bentner, of course. Does anyone remember Lord Bentner?
Definitely.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. Give us a... Tom, let's start with you. Lord Bentner, what does he mean to you, apart from the pink boots?
he was actually one of the only players I ever read that swore Arsene Wenger on the phone, because apparently one of the transfer deadline days, he was desperate to get out and he wanted to go to Crystal Palace, but Wenger kept hold of him. And I can't remember where I read it. And he was swearing at him, telling him all these bad things, and all Wenger responded with, "I'll see you on Monday." So, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. There was times when he came on as a sub, he would make a difference. He was a bit like Giroud, but he wasn't as good as he thought he was. That's the frustrating thing.
That's why he got the name, wasn't it? Because he was the next Thierry Henry, and that didn't quite pan out. Silent Dave thought he was going to be the next Thierry Henry as well. What was his stats? Not very good, were they? 2005 to 2014, 108 appearances, 24 goals. So it was quite modest, wasn't it? Anyone else got a Nicholas Bentner memory? Anyone? Or are you too young, you guys?
I remember him.
I saw him fluff a couple of sitters. How you could miss these goals. It was the open goal. It was yawning. Mm. And he just somehow, his feet got tied up and he just fell over. And it was quite embarrassing, really. There is a reel on YouTube of Lord Bentner and his misses and fluffs. But we'll wish him happy birthday anyway. What's to lose? Right then, I predicted a 4-0 win because I was super confident. It wasn't that good, was it? But that first half performance, it deserved 4 goals. Let's go around the table, as it were. What impressed you, Tom?
To be honest, what really impressed me was the mentality, because the fact that we haven't won in 8 games there in the Premier League, and to turn up, and after what happened last year, I know there was circumstances because we conceded a penalty and obviously Rob Holding got sent off. But this year we seem to have a really good mentality where we've gone to stadiums where we've had bad results previously, or it's a bogey team. And we were just fantastic. So I would just give it credit to the mentality of the team. And it just seems like everyone's on the same wavelength completely. And even, I know we're obviously going to talk about the actual game, but what happened at the end, it just shows how they're all sticking together and there's solidarity throughout the team. So I would say the mentality of it all was fantastic.
Anyone who's coming up against us, I'd say beware the Xhaka. That's what you've got to be aware of. He's like, an exorcist, isn't he? Lauren, what impressed you?
It's a great question. I think there's very little that we can complain about, really, overall. I think mentality is a great one. There wasn't a single poor performance on the day. I thought everyone gave 100%. We left them absolutely standing. Obviously, we're going to talk about this more in detail, but just it was almost flawless, you know what I mean? Every player, I think it's probably the best team performance we've had this season. We ran rings around them. It was phenomenal. The first half, it was, I haven't felt that relaxed watching a game in a long time. And that says a lot, you know. It was mental. It was really, really crazy. And you're kind of pinching yourself going, is this actually a North London derby? Like,
it was kind of too easy, wasn't it?
It was
a tougher setup.
In a way it was, yeah. They looked completely overwhelmed and we looked fully in control. So I mean, I think the togetherness, if you're looking for one word to sum that all up, I'd say the togetherness of the team. It was almost faultless. It was a really, really enjoyable game as an Arsenal fan.
Nick, where were you watching this this absolute fiesta of a game? Where were you watching it?
I was watching it at home. I have a friend that's living with us. Just moved from the other side of the country, so I wanted him to take in a game with me because I was quite elevated. I was a bit nervous about this. Like, I'm confident we were better. We're better side, obviously, but when it comes down to it, it's been a long time. I just had nightmares from last year, and I actually went and watched the end of the last episode of All or Nothing. I just watched yesterday because I felt like we had buried those demons from last year, and I finally went and watched the end of it. But yeah, I'll agree with Tom and Lauren. I mean, I thought as much of a team display it was, I just saw so many great individual displays. And to me, what really stood out was the back line. We look at what Arteta has put so much money in, and what he went in first was buying Gabriel, buying Ramsdale, buying Ben White, Zinchenko, and already had Saliba, and he cared for him in a very specific way. And just comparing that to last year's team, I mean, the whole back line was tremendous, and I think that allowed us to do everything else so confidently. So, yeah, it's been especially when you look at the team that we played at the end of last season. I think Cedric played, Nuno played, I think Tomiyasu played and came off, Rob Holding played. So it was about night and day as it can get in terms of back line.
And did you have a few beers? Of course you did.
I didn't actually, no. I'm planning on next weekend for the United game.
Oh, we'll have some for that. I want revenge. We'll talk about that later. Right? So let's talk about that team that was totally different to the last time out. 4-3-3 formation. It was Aaron Ramsdale in goal, Zinchenko, Gabriel, William Saliba, Ben White, Martin, the God, Odegaard, Thomas Partey, Granit Xhaka, Bukayo Saka, Eddie Nketiah and Gabriel Martinelli. It was a raucous atmosphere. The first goal, let's come to Tom. You didn't see any real celebrations. I was sitting about 6 feet away from the television and I was slightly confused. The ball went in. I didn't celebrate as a goal. The Arsenal away fans, you couldn't hear them. And then as the players ran away, that's when we all got on the programme. What did you make of it?
I was working at the time and I didn't even hear anything on my phone. Like, they're basically like, you can hear the crowd or anything. So, and then someone, one of my colleagues was like, oh, you've scored. And they kept showing the camera on Lloris. And I was like, oh, it's obviously a mistake by Lloris then, because why is it showing him all the time? And then I couldn't believe what I was watching. Like, you know, I kept watching people talking about the difference between Ramsdale and Lloris. And there was a lot of Tottenham fans backing Lloris. But I'm sorry, I think he's finished. I honestly think in the summer, if you look at Tottenham, that's one of the things they've got to get rid of is Lloris. He's, and even the goal kick.
No, keep him. He's an asset.
Well, yeah.
Keep, you need to keep that fellow.
For us, it's great. But even his goal kick for the second goal, it was a mistake as well. So it was actually two mistakes he made in that game. And obviously Nketiah had the chance early on, and that was another mistake by him as well. So, you know, and I think that really deflated Spurs. I just think after that, they weren't coming back at all. They just looked terrible. Really, really
Yeah,
poor.
They looked really shocking. I tell you what, though, for that first goal, Saka out on the right. Nick, what a beautiful ball by Thomas Partey, who played an absolute corker all game.
Yeah, what would we do without him? I guess we saw that last season and we were a shadow of how we're playing now. I think there's so many conversations about who our best player is, and that can come and go with who's on form, but I think it's easy to say who our most influential player is, and it's definitely him. I saw something, a stat from last season to this season. He's completing 13 more passes this season compared to last season. I guess when you look game to game, like, that's a big difference, and he's definitely being relied upon more, and he is changing games. It's funny how long it took him to adapt to this style. And ever people were starting to call him a bust for 50 million, dropping that release clause. You know, when are we going to get it right? We need to think about offloading him, but you can't imagine doing that right now. He's playing fantastic right now.
Well, Lauren, on the last pod, we kind of pointed out the key areas, which was, it wasn't rocket science, was it? The goalkeeper had virtually had it. And then we were saying that, or Jay said, if you keep Kane and Son quiet, that's it. Sounds easy, doesn't it? But it was, wasn't it?
It was. And I think they made it easy as well. I thought Son had a very poor game. He didn't look like he wanted to play, you know. There was times when, you know, they might have got the ball. They were so sloppy on the ball. But their forward players, those players who are so influential for them, Son and Kane. Kane, okay, he
sounds like
he
a was, cop show, doesn't it? Song and Kane. Some sort of jazz music, absolutely. Guitars and everything.
Absolutely, but
Inspector
I just
Kane.
I was
just hit
watching
my elbow on a chair
song.
Again.
Mind yourself. You need to move that chair. I was watching Son and he just looked so poor. He had no interest in the game. He didn't want to be there. He was making no runs. He was creating nothing. So, you know, as great as our back line was, they didn't want to be there. They had no interest in the game. They made it easy for us, unfortunately. Harry Kane did offer a bit more, but, you know, he was nothing in comparison to the discipline and the quality of our back line. So, yeah, we survived that one pretty easily.
17 minutes in, we've been mentioning Mr. Son, who didn't fancy it and normally got a box of tissues with him. Great save by Aaron Ramsdale. And as we've just said, that the back line coped with him really well. I was very impressed with Saliba and and White on the right, because he's always found that channel. He's always worked his magic there. And it was quite curious because you saw him having to trail off to the other side of the pitch just to try and get a sniff, but it didn't work out. 23rd minute, Odegaard pulls off a save out of Lloris, Mr. Butterhands. This was one of those ones where you thought, oh, Odegaard's got his eye in now. He's just warming up, isn't he? And then let's go to Tom. 25 minutes, Partey tees up a strike, a volley. Whoa, what a fizzle. He can hit them. When he hits them, it's either rose head or it's bang on, isn't it?
But my brother said to me, he actually shinned it because they were talking about it on Match of the Day 2, saying that, you know, he made good contact considering it was a shinning and stuff like that.
I thought it was as well, but I played it back and I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I thought he was, I mean, even if it was a shinning, who cares? You know, I would have accepted it. That was a great strike, to be fair to him. But to be honest, them three deserve so much credit, that midfield trio. And granted, I remember you said to me last time I was on the podcast, like, who was the most impressive player this season or the best performing? And I said, it's got to be easy. It's Granit Xhaka, definitely. And he's carrying on. He's doing it really well. Odegaard, one thing I have to give Odegaard credit, when they made him captain, I really wasn't sure about that. But week on week, he seems to be enjoying that challenge and everything. And then like Nick said about Thomas Partey, how many times he got criticised. When are we going to see the real Thomas Partey? You know, for that, like the way he plays for Atletico Madrid, but he's been fantastic this season. And he's obviously back to his best by the looks of it.
I'll tell you what, when he hit that and it hit the post, whether it was, he's got strong shins, isn't he? And that really, that really took off. And I think about 5-pint glasses fell off the shelves at the Tollington Arms. that's how hard. This character, Romero, he was booked in the 35th. He was a bit of a sloppy character, wasn't he? I felt that really, on the run of play, he could have probably been the candidate to get sent off, Lauren.
Mm-hmm. No, I thought a few times he overstepped the line, but I think he was lucky to only have picked up the yellow, really, to be honest. But again, it just shows that their players are getting frustrated. We were, like I said, running rings around them. They didn't really know how to handle us, and they were just resorting to dirty tactics, you know.
I've got to tell you, the person I hate the most is Eric Dyer. I've only got a look at him and the back goes up. There's something about that guy I just don't like. He talks, I don't like him. He does nothing, I don't like him. So he doesn't have to do much at all. Nick, 36 minutes, Odegaard doubles the lead. Saka on the right, Fede, his captain, through the middle. 20 yards plus out, wasn't it? It was quite a difficult strike, really, wasn't it? Because it covered some distance. You've got to keep that low. And you've got to keep it hard.
Yeah, it was. It reminded me a little bit of Cesc Fabregas versus Milan, but I was also reminded on our page about Cesc versus Tottenham away at the Lane. Had kind of a similar longer range, bounced once or twice and snuck in there. I mean, it wasn't in the corner or anything, but was still a great strike. And you could tell that I feel like there's some games where there's an emphasis on long shots. And in the first game, Thomas Partey scored the opener from distance. And a couple minutes before in this game, Odegaard had his strike from range. It was saved well. And it was interesting when he found a little more space that he could do that. I think with the three back, with the two midfielders for Tottenham, there's that little pocket of space. And I think he just popped right in there on the transition. Great ball from Partey to Saka. And Saka, maybe not his like match defining game, but I mean, he showed his quality by just his product in that final third to release Odegaard. And the man can't stop scoring six goals in eight away games, I believe it is. I mean, that is a captain stepping up, no doubt. It's been tremendous.
Tactically, Arsenal delivered a masterclass. As we said, that first half was a corker. Lauren, what did you make of Conte's tactics? I've seen him a couple of times this season and they bore the pants off me. No wonder Wenger turned on the TV in a hotel room and fell asleep. I mean, they are dreary, aren't they? They play very compressed at the back. They've got no real creative gifts, have they? And it's like hoofing it over the top. Mm. Nick's disappeared. Hopefully not for too long. Nice picture, though. They hoofed it over the top and they were just hoping for Kane and Son to run onto it.
It was very one-dimensional. You could see, I mean, the first half... like
can you do half just... a dimension?
Yeah, exactly, half the dimension. But the first half in particular, they didn't get a sniff of the ball, really. We saw nothing from them, absolutely nothing. And I think second half, they did come out a bit stronger. I think it was probably a bit, I think 2-0, it's quite flattering to them, which sounds a bit ridiculous. But that first half, we really should have capitalized more. And we should have really walked out in that second half, having the game wrapped up, you know. It did, second half had that feel that, you know, if they do get one of these long balls over the top and Kane gets on the end of it, it opens the game up a bit. They're back into it. They're liable to do that. But, you know, it is one dimensional. When those balls weren't working, there wasn't really much more creativity being offered. It was very stagnant, and yeah, you know, that's the difference between Conte and Arteta.
Well, they just haven't got the creativity, have they? They looked stifled, they looked embarrassed, they looked completely dreadful, to be honest. And we did that. We made them look like that. Right, Nick, let's cruise on to the 48th minute. Shameful claim for a penalty. Højbjerg against Saliba. What did you make of that? As soon as they replayed it, I was like, get out of here.
You know, it's interesting. I saw the 2 minutes of added time, and then I think Saka went down. I was like, oh man, that's going to add just a little more. And I was like, just get me to halftime, and I think we're going to be totally fine. And then, then that chance came and went past, and I thought that was it. And then they blew for the penalty, and I was like, there's our token North London Derby penalty. Here's Harry Kane's token penalty goal. And when they showed it back, I could not believe it. And just why blow the whistle? Why not make the call and then watch it back? Because if you're standing there watching that, surely you can't think that's a penalty. I mean, just disgraceful watching it back. I mean, he should have been booked for a dive. It was pathetic. Absolutely.
I said to Dave, it's simulation, isn't it? He's gone to the deck, and there was and Saliba was facing the goal, and how he expect to carry that off, I don't know. So Ramsdale made some excellent saves from Kane, Son, Richarlison, and the best one was from Sessegnon. What a great left foot to poke out there. A bit of the old Pat Jennings coming in. If you're old enough, Podders, you might remember the great man. He used to make himself very big, spread himself around. Eddie Nketiah, Tom, had a bit too heavy a touch for his two chances, didn't he? Just a shame, really. The ball ran away from him twice. He didn't quite get his foot on it. But I thought he had a good game.
Yeah, I like Eddie Nketiah. I really think we're we are very harsh on him because he's one of those players where he turns up with some goals in certain games and then, oh, but he needs to do it next week against, you know, the big teams. So now because he didn't score, but he had a great game, everyone's like, but he needs to do more to get a goal against United. And I just think we're very harsh on him because when you look at it, Gabriel Jesus hasn't scored many goals, but it's because of what he does that everyone loves him and how much he presses and works hard and everything. But I think Eddie does this exactly the same. The only thing I'll give Eddie, I think he's better at, is probably his finishing. And I know he didn't finish and everything, but like you said, his touch was very heavy. But I like Eddie Nketiah. I think he's a good number two to have in terms of a striking option. And I mean, look at the difference in when he was a kid to now. Like, he's bulked up. He's quite a big, strong lad. I think he'll be fine. I honestly think he can help us because I know we moan about him, but has anyone ever thought if he got injured, what the hell do we do then? Especially since we haven't bought anybody yet.
I've had a phone call, Tom, from Mikel. He said, get your boots out, Tom. I said, it's not a problem. I'll be there. I don't even want paying. I'll just come. Just give me a sandwich at half time. I think you're right. I mean, I've been quite critical myself, not critical as such, but sort of wondering whether Eddie could fill slightly big boots, isn't it? I mean, we've had some strikers over the years, Thierry Henry, Dennis Bergkamp, you've had all these people, even Giroud. I mean, good quality players. Then you've got to come in and fill in for Jesus. It's a difficult role to do, but he has done it immaculately. And Podders, you heard it here. Don't all the other stuff that we got wrong. You heard this. He will score against Manchester United, guaranteed. There's a few bits to clear up before we move on. Richarlison, he's a cast iron muppet, isn't he? The clash, I don't know whether you saw it. It was on Twitter. Clashed with Tomiyasu when he wasn't even on the pitch, and neither was Tomiyasu. He had his finger in Ramsdale's face. And he refused to shake hands with Gabriel Martinelli, who is Brazilian as well. What's that about? Lauren, can you believe this guy? He's an absolute twonk, isn't he?
It was a disgraceful performance. I mean, it was the most passion Spurs had on the pitch. I'll give you that, yeah. But it was embarrassing to watch, really. And even the clips coming out then on Twitter afterwards, you know, he was trying to... I think the clip with Tomiyasu was he was trying to interfere with an Arsenal thrower or something. The Martinelli clip was just... You know, he was trying to, I think it was a fist bump or something. It was so pathetic. And then the more I see the Ramsdale clip at the end, the more angry I become because he was so out of order. And, you know, you can argue all you want, but I think the actions that the players have on the pitch definitely inspires the fans in the stand. And I think had Richarlison not have, you know, kind of antagonized Ramsdale the way he did, the fans probably wouldn't have reacted the way they did, which I'm sure we're going to talk about as well. I thought it was a disgraceful performance, and it'd be interesting to see if the FA have anything to say about it, I think.
Well, it's going to be difficult for them, isn't it? It's got Harry Kane is the England captain. They love a bit of Spurs, so probably nothing. They'll probably get a night out at the opera. That's what will happen. Nick, what did you see the Conte Xhaka spat? That was quite interesting. That was lovely. I was like, go on, Granit.
Man, he is ruthless. And probably similar to Richarlison, to where it's like, man, if you play against him or are a supporter of a team that plays against him, like, you just can't hate the guy anymore, probably. But when he's on your side, you're all for him. And yeah, the American stream went and showed that for a while, and he was really going at it. And I saw multiple tweets that talked about you could tell when Granit Xhaka's fighting his demons on the field, and it made me laugh because then later
I need that red card. I want that red card.
it's so ingrained, his the nightmares of his past. But yeah, I love that. I mean, I don't think Conte's a stand-up guy, and I have no idea the context of the situation, but I'll always back Xhaka when he's having a go, because he's usually standing up for the team or for the players. So I'm all for it.
This is what you want to see. You want to see a bit of spice and passion, don't you? I remember a few years back with Aaron Ramsey. And he was having a hoo-ha, and I don't even think he was on the pitch at that time. So I like this fire. I like this sort of waving about, even though Mikel gets slagged off running up and down and gesticulating. It's all part of the game. If you want to take up shove Haitney or you want to take up Tiddlywinks, do that. But this is the real kind of vibe that you get from football. Tom, did you see the other thing I want to talk about? Is the quirky bit of control by Martinelli with his shoulder. It was almost like he was in a training session. Embarrassing for the old spuds.
I didn't actually see that, to be honest.
Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. No. Ball came over and he couldn't even be bothered to sort of face onto it. So he just stuck his shoulder up and just brought it down. Just like, oh, it's a kickabout. Yeah, that's all it is. It's a kickabout.
Kind of summed up the game, I think, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah, I think it did.
Just
yeah.
head and shoulders above them. Excuse me.
So then there was the nonsense at the end. Richarlison finger in the face of Ramsdale. Ramsdale was quite an innocent thing, wasn't it? He was getting flack, which he does all the time. As I said the other week, he got £17 thrown at him when he was at Leeds. This time he's getting a load of verbal. So he's turned around, poked his tongue out, kissed the badge. What's the problem with that? And then apparently he's being disrespectful in Richarlison's book. Nick, what's this? This whole situation probably led to what followed. Do you think?
Yeah, to me, it's very much a case of if you're going to give it, you have to be able to take it. And I can't imagine some of the things the athletes hear from just normal everyday people. But since they're on the other side of it, if they responded in that same way or they said those same things back, oh my gosh, I've provoked him. Like how can you take that from him and whatever? But yeah, I have no issues with kissing the crest, especially to away fans after taking it for 90 minutes in a derby with a man of the match performance too. I mean, if you ever have a right to do that in a game like that, fair play. If that caused things to kick off, then it was crazy because he was going back to get his gloves and that just brought him right there. And then it all really kicked off after that. And I can't believe that guy ran down and kicked it. They actually just arrested him. They said he was 35. Can you imagine being 35 years old running down and just taking a whack at the opposition because
he's quite a big cheese in some company as well. He's not like, you know, it's not like on the shop floor. I hope they throw the book at him. I hope he's banned from every possible sporting event. That could have been quite nasty. And it sets a precedent for other things as well. You've got to nip this in the bud. We've already had Jack Grealish getting slapped about. We really want to stop this. Yes, I can understand they were upset with the result. And as I say, I think that Richarlison business probably made it a lot worse. Right, let's do the stats before we move on. 17 shots for them, 14 for Arsenal, 7 shots on target for them, 5 for us, 51% possession for them, 49% for us, 461 passes for them, 4-5-6 for us, 82% pass accuracy. I find that hard to believe. In that match, didn't see two passes strung together at 84% pass accuracy for us. Now, Aaron Ramsdale won the player of the match, but as we've said, there were so many good performances, so many solid outings. Saliba making Son go wide and white, Partey with his class, touch and vision. Saka, two or four players at times were on him, weren't they? Every single time. Gabriel, solid as a rock defensively. White shutting down that right-hand side. Zinchenko all fired up. I thought he had a good game, Lawrence Zinchenko, did you? He got beaten in a couple of battles. There was interesting battles going on all over the pitch. And I didn't realise he was quite so small.
I thought it was a good performance from him as well. And, you know, we have to remember that he's only new to the squad, you know, relatively new to the squad, and Arteta is bringing him in to be a bit more of an inverted left back. He really wants him in those attacking positions, and sometimes you see him pulled out, you know, a bit more centrally than you would see Ben White, for example, who kind of, you know, stays pretty tight there. I thought he was very good. I thought there was a few times when, yes, he did get beaten or slight mistakes, but again, it was such a good overall performance that we were able to, you know, right the wrongs, and overall, you can't really fault him.
Right. Gary Neville, by the way, who we can't stand. Can't stand someone else as well. Up Your Arsenal on Twitter. Gary Neville said, I know Arsenal won 2-0 against Tottenham today, but Ben White putting two fingers up mocking Spurs is a disgrace. The FA need to look into that. Gary Neville. Shut it. Anyway, let's do round the table. Player of the match, Nick.
Yeah, it had to be Ramsdale. I think that was his best performance with us, and not just with saves. The saves were tremendous. I think on XG he saved worth two goals. He really stood up when he needed to, and just thought he commanded the whole box really well. Great presence that showed no nerves or anxiety, whereas his opposite, Lloris, World Cup winner Lloris, looked like that was his first derby game. So yeah, Ramsdale for sure.
Tom?
I'm going to go with Martin Odegaard because of the class in midfield. He was like the conductor, got the second goal as well, and kind of calmed us down, the nerves and everything. And the only reason, even though I agree with Nick, I think Ramsdale was fantastic, it makes it sound like we were so peppered in the second half by Tottenham, and it wasn't like that at all. And I understand that it was crucial saves, like against Sessegnon, that was incredible, because when I saw that, I was like, that's a definite goal, and he obviously saved it. But I think Odegaard was worthy of it as well. So I think Odegaard for me, to be honest.
Oh, we've split the ranks, Podders. Hey, where's Lauren going? We don't know. Lauren.
Do you know what? I think I'm going to have to pick someone else as well. I'm going to go with Gabriel because I thought he was so solid at the back. Bit of an unsung hero. I've said it before. I just thought that to me was the standout performance. He was faultless, so solid. He did everything he was meant to do. And he's been so good recently as well. And I don't think he's getting as much credit as he should be getting. I think we're so focused on how great Saliba has been throughout the season. You know, he's relatively new to our Premier League squad. And I'm not faulting him either. He's been fantastic. But I think Gabriel often goes unnoticed in what he brings to the team. And again, if we talk a lot about Xhaka's growth and his ability to kind of, you know, let's say shelf his demons and really put on, you know, best foot forward. And I think we're seeing that from Gabriel. He's definitely matured an awful lot. And I just think he is so important in our back line. He's, you know, the leader in the back line, really, from what we had last season to this season. He's the only one who's really retained their place. And yeah, I'm going to go with Gabriel because, like I said earlier, it was such a great team performance, but based on individual performances that all came together. So I think it's very valid to have a selection of players here.
Well, this kind of indicates that we're split and we're going for different people because of how wide the excellence was across the pitch. And I'm going to go for Thomas Partey because that guy just oozes class. He kind of picks his moment when to make that pass, that killer pass. Or he just turns and mops things up, looks around, starts us off on another channel. So, Tom Partey for me. Now, let's have a little... I don't know whether you saw it on... again, it was a video on Twitter. It was Arsenal before the kickoff, and they're all really low on the pitch. Do you see it? And Granit's giving it some real fiery whatevers. Come on, lads, let's kick some Spurs ass. I thought it was brilliant, and I loved that. So we'll mention that purely because Xhaka, the rise has been phenomenal from the low, from, zero to hero. And this is part of the turning of the tide. And you've got to give Arteta as well a big mention for that because he's been probably monumental influence, keeping him at the club. We were going to sell him for something like 16 million, which is a pop in the ocean, isn't it, really? And then he's gone on to these new dizzy heights. Anyway, we're going to move on. Lauren, bring us up to speed with the WSL. Arsenal versus Chelsea. Take us through the lineup. You got the lineup there?
I do indeed. It was a long Sunday, let me tell you that. Two London derbies in one day. Oof, I was not able for it.
I can't believe it now.
Stressful. So obviously the women kicked off first. We had a pretty unchanged back line of Zinsberger in goal, Wienreuther, Williamson, Rafaela and Catley at left back as well. Midfield, Kim Little was back, which was great to see. Captain Kim Little, Leah Valti also. And Manum was playing the kind of 10 role. Then we had Ford on the left, Lena Herting, summer signing on the right, and Black Stinius starting up front in the striker role. So obviously, you know, a lot of injuries, but I think that was probably the strongest team we could have fielded.
It's starting to look a bit thin, isn't it? It's
100%.
Not one of those you look at the paper and you go, ooh, that looks good.
No, absolutely not. I think the biggest surprise was McCabe being dropped. I suppose that was the kind of shining light on the bench, and you kind of thought maybe she'll come on and she'll work a bit of magic when, you know, the Chelsea legs tire. But apart from that, no, apart from a few new signings, which, knowing how Jonas Eidevall manages the team, it takes a bit of time for him to start to integrate those players in. You know, I mean, Lena Herting, like I said, I think that was either her first or second start in the Premier League, and she's been here since August or something, you know what I mean? So it takes a while for him to, I don't know if it's him to build a trust in the players or for him to feel as though they have a good understanding of what's going on in terms of the team and the kind of fluidity of it. But yeah, so despite the signings we've made, it's probably going to be a while before we see them fully integrated into the team. But yeah, definitely looking a bit thin at the moment.
I'll tell you what, it was a cracking atmosphere there as well at the Emirates. Nearly 47,000. What did you think of the overall performance, Lauren? It was a quite hard-fought game, wasn't it? It was a bit close, a bit too close at times.
It was tough. It was definitely a tough game. And I think you could tell that it was obviously the first game back after the break. So the winter break is kind of from mid-December to mid-January. Both obviously Chelsea and Arsenal had Champions League games, so they kind of brought them up until just before the Christmas period. But it was a bit, it took a bit of time for both teams to get into it. There was a few sloppy touches, but overall, I think, you know, as much as I hate to admit it, Chelsea are an exceptional side, as are Arsenal. So it's always it is a joy to watch, you know, even if you're invested in one side, you can kind of sit back and you can appreciate the quality that is, you know, these teams bring to the WSL. It is a joy to watch. Tough though, as an Arsenal fan.
I tell you what, it was always in the back of my mind watching this because it's such a tight game and it could have gone either way quite quickly, that Sam Kerr was awfully quiet. She's one of these players, right, where you don't hear from her and then you hear from her because she's on the score sheet, and that was the case. But we'll get to that in a minute. We kind of put Chelsea off their stroke by applying a high press. And we were mopping up the ball, the sort of second ball as well we'd be getting to before they were. It wasn't a Chelsea performance I kind of expected because I've seen them quite a bit. But at least getting towards the end, as you said about that enforced break, that winter break, Arsenal looked on dead legs. They were really heavy and struggling.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we did start sharper. I think the first half we're a lot more positive than they were. Yeah, we were a bit sloppy on the ball, but we were stringing more passes together. I think obviously Sam Kerr, we can't not mention her, regarded as one of the best players, as the best player in the league by many people, an absolute force to be reckoned with. But I think one name that we do have to mention here is Lauren James, the Chelsea player. I thought she created some amazing chances. She looked leagues above everyone else. You know, it looked like she'd been playing all throughout the winter break. She didn't look like she had a day off. She was exceptional. But yeah, no, absolutely. I think as the game went on, and what I was really surprised about was the lack of subs as well. But as we mentioned, that bench is looking very thin. So Katie McCabe did come on. You know, it just is a bit thin at the moment. And it looks so as though we're scraping the barrel a bit here. You know, we've got in 3-4 signings already this window, but it doesn't seem
as
though...
It can't be much of the barrel left, Lauren. I mean, the barrel must be like balsa wood.
Oh, God. It's getting a bit scary now. And you think, you know, when the Champions League games pick up and obviously the cup games as well, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a very, very thin squad to be working with. You know, we all obviously have Meade and Miedema out with ACL injuries. Rule them out for the rest of the season. But you start thinking, what if someone else picks up a knock? Obviously, we had Kim Little out recently. She's only back. Our two centre backs were also out at the same time. It's a little bit worrying, but you know, the most important thing is results. So we'll keep fighting for them.
Yeah, there was a nice sort of contest. It was a bit of a ding dong with Ford and Charles. That was a great little contest down that left hand side, and it resulted in a penalty, 57th minute. It wasn't a penalty, was it? God,
not a million years.
It's so obvious. They not picked that up. There was no VAR, though, was there?
No. So there's no VAR, unfortunately, even though it's in the Emirates throughout the league, there's no VAR. But no, I think, you know, if the ref had seen that back, it never in a million years would have been a penalty. The contact started outside the box and the momentum kind of carried for it in. And I think she did very, very well to play it off convincingly enough to get the penalty in the end. But, you know, to be completely honest, I don't think we were going to have another breakthrough in the game without that penalty. So we'll take it when it comes, you know, we'll take it when it comes.
Well, I was quite happy when it went in and I thought, oh, well, there's the one we didn't get like X amount of years ago or whatever. anyway, Kim Little stepped up to pop it in the net. I always feel it's a better side when she's in there. She gives it more purpose, very versatile, very good player. Good movement, well contested, worthy of a massive crowd. But Chelsea just gave everything and they kept going, didn't they? This is the Chelsea vibe. Just keep on rolling out, hoping for something to happen. And then Sam Kerr pops up with, I don't know whether you've seen it, guys, but it's a header worthy of any match. It was an absolute blinding header. No chance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's unstoppable. And I think a lot of credit needs to go to the Chelsea sub who came on. I think her name is Kankovic. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but she came on in the 81st minute. And I think that's where Chelsea not won the game, but that's essentially for them, it was a win because we were all over them and they were able to get, they were able to walk away with the point. And I think that's where the game was decided, let's say, in the amount of subs that they brought on, in the fresh legs, in the, I suppose, creative outlets. Yeah, they used them all. And, you know, credit where credit's due. I actually really like Emma Hayes as a manager. She's exceptional. She terrifies me, but she's an exceptional manager.
She's scary. I wouldn't like to see her in a dark alley. Here's your money. But,
exactly. But no, credit where credit's due. She worked the game well. Her subs were very tactical. And like I said, that cross in... there was no way Sam Kerr was going to miss. I think it's a bit unfortunate for Williamson because she defended so well all game. And, you know, when crosses like that come in and you have a player of Sam Kerr's quality, she's going to find the spaces in between defenders. And there's no way that's not going straight into the back of the net, unfortunately.
Well, there's a good one here from off the ball. They said aggression, ? I know a player. Did Arsenal lack the cutting edge and aggression by benching Katie McCabe? Possibly. But we'll leave that there. So it was disappointing, but a draw was probably a fair result, wasn't it? Transfer window's still open. We could still do a little bit. We won't be doing too much, that's for sure. Player of the match, Lauren.
It's a tough one. It's a really, really tough one. I probably would give it to Williamson despite the goal. I think she defended very well. She controlled the game from the back, as she always does. She's so solid. She's just an exceptional player. And I think on the topic of transfers, just to mention that, you know, we're talking about the Lioness captain, Alessia Russo, who obviously scored that iconic backheel goal in the Euros, has been linked to Arsenal. So her contract with United is up this summer. You know, I mean, if we're talking about dream signings, that's the kind of person we need. You know, that's the person that we need. We need someone who can score goals. I think that's what we lacked. Blackstinius started up front. She looked off the pace. She didn't really create much chances. She wasn't in the box when she needed to be. Someone like Alessia Russo would give us that option. And she knows how to score goals. Not only that, she knows the league inside out. She's playing with United. And she's scoring goals every weekend for fun.
I was going to say, since the Euros with the Lionesses winning, have you noticed an increase of attendance in the WSL? Or is it... Massively.
I think there, I can't remember exactly the stat now or when it was, but I think 5 years ago, the Arsenal Chelsea game was played in front of 9,000 spectators.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, we're almost filling up, maybe not filling out, but, you know, 47,000 spectators in the Emirates on the same day as the North London Derby. It's pretty impressive, you know.
Do they show a lot of games on Sky and stuff?
BBC do it as well.
They've started showing a lot more, so this game was on Sky. That was early morning. I think they normally show one or two games a week, but all the games are free on either the FA player, sometimes they're on BBC as well, but Sky have a few as well, which is really great to see because, you know, you kind of get the fanfare, the analysis, which, you know, I think we all love to see at halftime and at full time and really enjoy the game, which adds another dimension to it.
I think there was a general assumption that women's football was many levels below. And when you actually got to see it, and I was guilty of not watching it because it wasn't available at the time, And the coverage was very scant. But now you've got no excuse. And some of the, especially with the Arsenal girls and Chelsea girls, wonderful, wonderful skills. Let's do the match stats before we move on to the old transfer window. Yes, get ready, Podders. So 13 shots for us, 17 for them. 7 on target for us, 2 for them. See, it shows the general sort of piece of the cake that we have. 39% possession for us, 61% for them. That's a bit weird. 360 passes for us, 535 for them. 79% pass accuracy for us, only 1% in it, 80% for them. So Brighton and Hove Albion on the 22nd away next. Any injury updates? Have we got any fresh bodies coming through the door in recovery?
In terms of no. Like I said, ACL injuries, we're not going to be seeing any of them back for a while. Brighton should be a good game. They've had a bit of a tough season. They've changed manager. It should be an easy win. Look, this should be the game that we kind of get back on track with. And hopefully we can get a few goals in and feel a bit more confident.
Absolutely. So let's get on to that transfer window. Mudryk walked away from, he took us up the aisle and then Scarpa, didn't he? Only to proclaim his love for the Chavs. There he was on social media, courting us, clapping his hands, praying, Arsenal shirt and all that stuff. It was just a smokescreen. Unbelievable, really. Were you disappointed, Nick, that Arsenal failed to get him? I mean, he is a decent prospect, but that figure, 88 million, is huge. It's incredible.
Yeah, I think I went through all 5 stages of grief and after, yeah, all of it. And yeah, I think
what's the third stage, by the way? What was that? Was it throwing things?
Yeah, I don't remember the order, but I felt it all for sure. But yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was talking to Lauren off air. Just, I have a group text with an Arsenal fan, a Chelsea supporter, and the Chelsea guy said Mudryk to Chelsea. And by that time, I mean, I thought we had it in the bag. And you know, as I checked Twitter later, things were happening very quickly, and I just couldn't believe that they swooped in. And they're just kind of that rich kid in school. It's like, oh, you want that? No, that's mine. Kind of thing. But the whole deal is so shady. It's the whole thing is so odd. You know, Shakhtar saying if we meet this amount of followers, then we'll share that information or more news. And then Chelsea putting Mudryk in their Instagram bio before anything was done. It's like, what? This is just, it was done so weird. There's an agreement in the contract that Chelsea plays a friendly in Ukraine post-war, I think, but just the whole thing. I mean, he was paraded around the bridge with his Ukrainian flag, and you can tell I feel like it's been a tough week for him. I feel like it moved so quickly with Chelsea. I think if I were to guess, it was from what I read in The Athletic, is the offer was the same. The amount of money up front was the same. It was the structure of the bonuses was just different. And, you know, Shakhtar, credit to them. They knew he was their crown jewel, and they, especially in their economy, had to cash in on him. And, man, just when you think you've been hurt and you're like, nah, I'm never going to get attached to a player that's not ours again. I'm not going to believe it till he's got the red and white on. You go do it, because I never seen anybody subtly, you know, show that he wants to move. I mean, it started with the interviews in the fall with Mudryk's wife, the Ukrainian reporter, and then CBS seemed to have an inside with him. And then the Fabrizio thing, you just question if he got a cut of that. Just the whole thing is just so odd. 8-year deal.
8.5 years. I mean, where's that deal come from? You don't hear of it, do you? 4 or 5 years is incredible, but 8.5 years. You know, his career will virtually be over.
Yeah, the 8-year deal, I think, is to skirt all financial fair play. If financial fair play is even a thing, I think that's to spread the deal out. And so it kind of fits into whatever guideline. I don't even know what financial fair play is. You can't say it's being put into place. But yeah, I mean, Laura and I were talking off air earlier. It's just how do you move somebody like that? They're going to get to a point. Chelsea's going to get to a point where they have so many players. I mean, we look at how many players they have injured right now. They're going to have to move players on. It reminds me a lot of what we had to do with Aubameyang, Ozil. You have these aging players are unhappy players, players that so there's going to be some players that aren't happy, aren't playing, want to leave, and are going to be on astronomical wages, and you're going to have to pay them to leave, and maybe they're going to do that. But it's the whole thing just reeked, and initially I was pretty mad at him, but I'm sure he got to a position where Shakhtar said, you're either going to take this or you're going to stay in the summer, and you can't knock a 22-year-old for just being like, yeah, you know, I'm going to take it. They're playing in Champions League right now. It's a relatively big club lately, but yeah, I feel bad for him, and like, you want him to do well kind of after how the whole situation went. But then part of you is like, man, he had his dream move to Arsenal, and that got blown up because all about money. So I feel bad for him, and I'm sad we didn't get him, because I think he would have been a tremendous addition. Was just dreaming of him on the bench against United after we beat Tottenham at the Emirates, and that was blown up very quickly. So yeah, we're gonna have to, I'll be interested to see if we do anything to move from here.
But it's quite weird, isn't it? You kind of think, Tom, that Shakhtar kept it going, kept the negotiations going, hoping that another bidder would come in. And the agent is probably on the phone to Chelsea saying, do you fancy this guy? Kind of creating a bidding war. There was something really smelly and unsavoury about it all.
Yeah, I'm not as forgiving as Nick. I hope
he's very forgiving, Nick.
Yes, when I say fail, I don't mean, you know, God forbid he has an injury or anything like that. I just mean in general, because what annoys me, if he just kept himself to himself, he got on with it, played for Shakhtar, and inside he probably thought, I really want to join Arsenal, then fair enough. But before you joined us, Tom, we were talking, and I said, like, it just annoyed me that he was twerking with Arsenal so much and saying he wants to join us, he wants to do this, he wants to do that. And then all of a sudden, he goes to Chelsea. And I'm just like, well, and like I said to Lauren and Nick, when he does the press conference, how can he honestly say, this is what I wanted, when we all know the truth? Yeah. He was always talking about Arsenal. So I know, you know, 22 is a young age. You probably think, what was he going to decide? It's hard to make that decision. Fair enough. Well, but
I wonder, Tom, was he influenced by the fact that 20 million of this deal went to the Ukraine? I wonder if because he wasn't a happy chap, was he? When he was paraded out, he came out in his flag. He looked miserable as sin.
That's what Nick said, to be fair. He said he looked like a hostage.
Yeah, he didn't look up for it at all. He had what I call now a Felix face, because Felix was really happy, but his face didn't join the party. That's what happened. Lauren, various opinions on this transfer from a club point of view. Some highly critical, labelling us embarrassing for the failure to secure the player. Others quite happy that club isn't about to commit to yet another Pepe deal. Where do you sit on this argument? I mean, you can see the value in both of them, can't you? But they had their price, and as Nick said, they matched Chelsea, but they weren't going to go over the top and go beyond that.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I think, you know, as much as I think we all wanted a player of that quality and a player so passionate to play for us, we don't want to be paying over the odds for a player like we did with Pepe, for example. If we think about the players that really bring, you know, value to our club, they're the players that we've bought from the Brazilian league for 6 million. They're the players that we kind of have homegrown. And like, it's not a team of 100 million plus players, you know, that's just not what Arsenal's about. And I think it's really, really, really admirable that obviously it's a tough pill to swallow, and no one wanted to, you know, lose out on a signing like that. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, I'm happy that we don't have a 22-year-old on an 8.5-year contract on 200k a week. We'll find better players. And look, as Nick mentioned, like, Chelsea are going to have a lot of players to shift. And I wouldn't mind, you know, if someone like Ziyech became available for a much more reasonable price tag. I think he's a type of player that would absolutely thrive under Arteta. It's a tough one. You know, obviously last season, it was pretty much the same with Vlahovic, and we kind of were all a bit miserable, and we thought, oh, you know, and there wasn't really that much going on in the background. I think the biggest thing this transfer window is that we do get someone in and that we do strengthen the squad. I think that's going to be the most telling thing. Disappointing we didn't get Mudrić, but, you know, onwards and upwards.
Mudrić, who's he? We don't want him. We never wanted him. He's just made all that up, all that crap he came out with on social media. Here's one from Purely Arsenal, which I thought was quite good. Can't get Buendia, but we got Odegaard. Can't get Emerson, but we got Tomiyasu. Can't get Valovic, but we got Jesus. Can't get Lissandro, we got Zinchenko. And that kind of puts it into perspective. That's what it's all about. You don't have to pay through the nose for these players. You can pick up better quality, cheaper. So that's what we're trying to say. By the way, Chelsea have spent the same amount, 468 million in the last 6 months, as Liverpool have spent 500 million in the last 10 transfer windows. So that kind of puts it in perspective, really, doesn't it? Right, let's run through some names, guys. Start with you, Nick. Moussa Diaby, 50 million euros. What do you think about that as a deal?
No, thank you. I've actually seen 100. Everybody knows how much money we have now. And yeah. So I don't think we can pull a fast one on anyone unless we get a reincarnation of Martinelli at Ituano. But he wouldn't be ready to do anything anyways. But yeah, I think, not worth it to me.
That's an interesting point, Nick, because we picked some of these players up off the radar, didn't we? Martinelli, no one had heard of him. Vieira, no one had really seen him much. And yet we got in there and we've got two really top quality players for peanuts.
Yeah, the difference is at least what we're trying to do in January is add right now for, because you just never know when we're going to be 8 points clear with half the season left. I mean, we're in a tremendous position and you don't want to bank on, man, you know, our players are at the age where they'll be peaking in 4 or 5 seasons, but we really got to go for this. And we don't need somebody, we don't need to spend 100 million on somebody who's not going to start, but I do think we need somebody who can add something right away. And I think that's that is a tricky spot to be in.
Right. Tom, Trossard, what do you think of that? Do you think
that's weird. That's the one I was going to say. Two players in my head is Trossard. And I know Tielemans, you know, when you mention him to certain people, they're like, I've heard his attitude is wrong and he's not very as good as people think he is. But the only reason I wanted players like that is because they know the Premier League. And I have to be honest, I never watched Mudrić. Have you guys actually watched him? Because I don't know what he was like when he was at Shakhtar.
Only the online clips, hits. You know, the greatest hits, yeah, the YouTube clips, you know, that kind of way. And obviously, I think we mentioned this before, they make everyone look like a superstar. So,
yeah, he was zippy, he was electric pace, great feet, great vision and skill as well. And he was quite kind of physical. He could lean into a tackle and get away with it. So, he was a prospect. But doing it in the Ukrainian league probably isn't the same as doing it in the Premier League. And as we say, experience is king, isn't it? Right then, Lauren. Valovic, he's back on the menu. He's back on the radar. I don't particularly want him. If you don't want to wear this shirt and this badge, sod off. We're not interested. What's your opinion, Lauren?
I'd have to agree. I think absolutely. You know, I think last year we put all our eggs in that basket and
wasted a lot of time.
Exactly. I don't know if it's the best way to go. And I think, you know, he's had a big move and he's proved that he can't really make it work. Why take the risk? Let's get someone young in. Let's get someone fresh who wants to play and who can. I think, as Tom mentioned there, Premier League experience is what we need right now. If we're really serious about, I don't say the word, the title charge, you know, God forbid. But if we're really serious about this, I mean, we're 8 points ahead now. We kind of have to mention it now, do we not? I think, you know.
Yeah, say it. 8 points.
I think, you know, this is what we need. We need to get those kind of players in who have experience, who we can basically just pick up and drop in. And I've seen, for example, a lot of links to Mitoma, the Brighton winger, and that is one signing that I would love to get. Whether it's going to happen or not, I'm not sure, but you know, that's the kind of player we need. Someone who's doing it week in, week out in this league and knows our position and, you know, is ready to go.
Right, Nick, last one. Fresneda, have you heard of him? He's a right back. I don't even know why we're going for another right back. Surely we've got enough options there.
It seems like Cedric's on his way out. It sounds like talks with Fulham happened today. So, yeah, people are really excited about him. He is top five in the world in minutes played by 2000, born in 2004. So, I mean, teenagers, I guess. So, in the top five leagues. So, like a 6 foot tall right back, and has played some center back, but played some right back. So, yeah, we don't really need a right back right now, but he seems one for the future, I guess, and to replace Cedric. I'm okay with that, but I do like the Trossard situation a lot, like Tom. Brighton's very smart, and since he had a falling out with De Zerbi, they if he's not playing, they know they need to cash in, and they know we have money and are in the position that we're in, and I'll be interested to see what that looks like. I think he is the most realistic and probably honestly the most needed. He can come in and do it right away. He's 28, so it's more of a short-term kind of thing, but somebody I think we could really need.
Yeah, I think there's a few options for us. Right there, Manchester United next. They keep moving the goalposts. We win the match that they didn't expect us to win. They say, well, they haven't met this one yet. So it's Manchester United next. It's a revenge trip for us because I still remember being in the Three Cups in Dover. There were two Man United fans. They're about 37, a very precise figure, Arsenal fans. And they just mugged us off. It was sucker punches all day long. And we played them off the park. They had Ronaldo at the time. Really annoying. They've done well under Ten Hag, I've got to say, and getting Ronaldo out seems like a masterstroke because it's revitalised the team and the club, and they're pressing for a top four. What do we think of this one, Tom? How do we think this one's going to go? I think we're going to give them another drubbing.
I mean, it's hard with United.
I'd like to think so, because, anyway.
Well, the thing is with United, I said this to my brother the other day, it doesn't matter if they're like in the top end of the table or the bottom. When they play against Arsenal, it means something to them. And they usually turn up for this game. And even at the Emirates, if you look at their record, it's not that bad. But I honestly think if we play like even the way we played at Old Trafford, we just got caught out by counterattacks. If we don't do that again and set up and play like we did at Old Trafford, just hopefully actually score our chances, I think we'll be fine. I honestly think so.
Yeah, I do as well. Hit them early.
But I'm worried that if they do beat us, I actually think they're actually involved in the title as well. So if we stop them, if we beat them, I think it pushes them out. And it's just between us and City, hopefully. But if they do beat us, I honestly think they are involved in it, definitely.
Well, they got Vieira next, haven't they? On is it tomorrow? Crystal Palace. So that maybe Big Pat can do us a favour. Maybe.
Well, I hope so. Hope so.
We love you, Patrick. So, Lauren, same team as the Spurs gig. Would you
alter
anything at all?
Not in the slightest. That's our best team. That's our best starting 11. And I think what's going to stand to us this match is we have Thomas Partey. I think last match he was injured and we had Lingkonga. And I swear to you, that man is, without him, we're undefeated in the league. You know? Sorry, with him, we're undefeated in the league. That makes more sense. He's the key, as Nick said, he is that player. He's the most influential player. It's going to be really interesting because I've seen a lot of talk of, you know, Casemiro versus Partey, who's the best defensive midfielder. To me, it's easy. It's him. We're at home. I'm excited. I know it's going to be a tough match, but I am excited. As you mentioned, United are kind of finding their form. Rashford's on fire. If we're talking about players, completely hypothetical players that you could pick and drop into the team, wouldn't he be an addition to the Arsenal squad? My God, that's the kind of player that everyone dreams of having. He's fantastic. It's going to be a good game. I am feeling confident, though, for it. We played them off the pitch last time. We were away from home. We have Thomas Partey back. I mean, we faced Spurs away from home and we were able to pick them apart. Confident, yeah, absolutely.
Well, they got very lucky, Man United, last time round.
They did.
Luck and a bit of skill, obviously, because they opened us up. And it was virtually, I think, looking back on it now, two of the goals were identical. We made the same mistake twice, which was really annoying. Surely Mikel, Nick, will use that loss to motivate the players. You won't need too much, will you, to get them going?
Yeah, I can see him showing something in the locker room about the last time we played them. You know, the one loss we've had in the league, and reminding them who it was, and you know, being dramatic as he is about how he uses things. But yeah, I think, like Lawrence said, adding Thomas Partey is just massive, and maybe they come in confident because they beat us. But they're the only team to beat us in the league. But I think as a supporter, this is all you can ask for, just to be in games like this that get the blood rushing and bring a nervous energy. You have belief in your team, but you don't know how it's going to happen. And it's been a long, long time since we've been in this boat. I think probably back to the 2015-2016 season. And I just have flashbacks that Welbeck goal against Leicester, when that was kind of like, hey, we think we can really do this. And this might be a game to where if we can win, we really might be able to think we can do this. So we'll be exactly halfway through the season. It's our 19th game. So, you know, those things might start to come up more, but I think, yeah, just what more can you ask for?
I think the next series of matches are key. Man United, do them, do City, put everyone on the back foot. And if we can start turning that around, I will be convinced about this title race if we can do Man United and City. I will be absolutely on board with it. Obviously, it's a lovely position to be in, and we're all really excited about it. But until we get past these two, then it just cements everything in, doesn't it? You get very excited about it. We don't want to have any disappointment, because I've had enough of that in my life as an Arsenal supporter, I can tell you. So let's do
Would we accept two draws? How are you feeling? Would we accept two draws from these games, or do you want all 6 points?
Well, I'd love 6 points. That'd be fantastic. But if you offer me 3 points and a point, I'd have that straight away. I don't care what order it comes in either, although I do love being Man United. Has to be said. 1979 FA Cup final at Wembley, the old Wembley, and that last-minute goal in the Brady final. Magic. to answer your question, Lauren, I don't care. What about you guys? Would you take two draws?
Yeah, I would be. I would, because as much as I want to prove that we can beat them, two draws doesn't help them at all either. It kind of keeps us where we're at, and gets both United games out of the way. Now we have both Tottenham games out of the way. Getting one City game out of the way. I think would be helpful.
I think we've got to show some backbone as well, and go for these 6 points, have this 6 points, because we deserve it and we are good enough to get 6 points. That's the thing. It's not like we always do this thing as Arsenal supporters, don't we? We always go, well, 1 point would be good, but, you know, we want more, don't we, Tom?
Yeah. Hazard, how does the fixtures go? Because isn't it United, then City in the Cup, and then is it City after that again? Or is that how it's going? Yeah, I would accept four points, because win our home game, and if we play Man City, when we play Man City in the league, is it away or is it at home?
I'm not sure, actually. I'll check here.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Because if it's away, I'll
your homework before you go on the podcast.
I'll snatch your hand up if it's away for a point.
I believe we're at home. Yeah, the 15th of Feb, we're at home.
There you go. She's on the
day
case.
After Valentine's Day, so...
So I'm going to...
That would be the most romantic thing that could happen.
I'll be happy with 4 points, even though, you know, we're at home against United. But Yeah, against City, it's a different prospect. So 4 points wouldn't be that bad, to be honest.
Right, predictions. I'm going to kick off this time. 2-1, Arsenal. Nick?
Yeah, I was going to say the same. I think there's going to be goals. We don't seem to play as well defensively at home, so I could see us giving one up, and United is they're on a very hot streak. But, man, that's going to be a cracking atmosphere. I think that would be a very tough place for anyone to come expecting to get anything out of.
So, Fortress, yeah. Emirates, isn't it? It's becoming a bit like that. No one wants to go there these days.
Yeah, I'm going 2-1.
2-1. Tom?
I'm going to go 3-1.
Oh, he's putting in that face. Look. Oh, he was 3-1. Two frames of mind.
I was more nervous about White Hart Lane than this one, so I'm going to go 3-1, Arsenal.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I'm bricking it over this one.
Tottenham, I hate even more, especially at White Hart Lane.
There's a long list of sort of teams Arsenal fans hate, isn't there? Chelsea, it just rolls on. Man United are right up there, aren't they? And anyone who beats us, basically. Lauren, what's your prediction?
I like 3-1. I think that's what I was going to go with as well. Give them a taste of their own medicine, what they gave us. I'm going to go out there and say maybe 4-2. Why not? Let's have an absolute belter. I think both teams are, both teams are an absolute threat going forward.
He's got them playing in that kind of Dutch way as well, isn't he? He's started to turn it on. They've started to turn a corner.
Credit where credit's due. He's done a great job, and you can see a kind of team identity coming in. And, you know, we talk about how Mikel has turned things around. But think about the team that Ten Hag inherited. I mean, it was so fragmented. It was individuals rather than egos rather than a team. And I think he's done a really good job in a very short amount of time. But I think we'll beat them. I'm not too worried about that.
Right. Well, thanks, guys. It's been a fantastic podcast. Thanks for joining me as usual. Just leave you with this, Andrew Podders. So get behind the teams and let's bring home these results. Keith Hackett, ex-Premier League referee, on FA charges on Arsenal. The worry for me, he says, is that I've seen lots of incidents from other clubs of a similar nature. These haven't been reported or charged. If I'm Arsenal, I can see where they're coming from when they say there's an agenda. So there we go. And Keith Hackett is a pretty solid guy. He's been on the podcast as well. So thanks for that, Keith. Keeping these FA planks in order and making us right as well, because there does feel like an agenda. Every time we turn around, we get charged with something. It's really annoying. Yet you see, like Man City, they were arguing with the referee. Nothing at all. I mean, it's contemptible, really. Guys, thanks very much. Podders, thanks for joining us. Don't forget, if you've got anything to say to us, it's an Arsenal thing 4@gmail.com. If you're watching the YouTube version, which is this, then this will sound quite weird when it goes to audio, won't it? But if you're watching the YouTube version, please subscribe. And if you're listening to the audio version, please like and follow. We have been hitting the roof with the audio version, but we've been doing really well with the YouTube version as well. So thank you very much for that. Guys, I will see you soon. And come on, the Arsenal. North London is absolutely red. Spanish Michael is still taking flak for his touchline antics, but former Arsenal man Martin Keown responded to Richard Keys' recent criticism. Take a listen. He got Keowned.
Who was it? Richard Keys? Is he still working, Richard? I think Richard had a little... What's he having a go at? He's just trying to create a headline because he's the other side of the world and no one's really listening.
You just got owned, you noob. You just got owned, motherfucker. You just got owned. You just got owned, you noob. You just got owned, motherfucker. You just got owned.
My thanks to Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter as SilentDave101, and that's where you can also find Jay as the Bull Gooner. Paul is at PMACCap, and Lauren is at LaurenD2710. The podcast is on every social media outlet, including Facebook, Twitter and TikTok. Please subscribe to the YouTube version and like and follow the audio version. Shout outs to Brandon Murphy, Dave Miller at Arsenal Attic, Simon Deasy at Gunners for Life, which is twin to the podcast. Look up arsedevils.com for the latest Arsenal news and opinions. A big thanks from the podcast team to all of you for your support and emails, whether you watch or listen. Every subscription and every follow counts. Until next time, look after yourselves and each other. And remember, North London is most certainly red.